Was he 26? 27? Another birthday had come and gone, with no one to remind him. No sweetbread, no candle lit and just as quickly blown out. "Blow it quick," his mother used to say. His father would barely get the thing lit before Jimmy leaned forward to puff it out. Just an instant of fire, barely a warming of the wax, and the family candle would be put away for his father, whose birthday came next. A silly tradition, he thought. But supposedly, each family had as many birthdays among them as there was wax. The Parker candle was many generations old, and not yet half gone. Jimmy used to think he'd live forever if he blew swiftly enough. He and his parents would all live forever. But none of that was true. It would only be him until he died, and so the candle had been a lie. He stepped into the water and waded toward the door, his feet shocked, half numb from the cold. The colorful film on the surface of the water swirled and mixed and flowed around the stanchions that held up the landing rail. Solo paused and peered beyond the landing. It seemed strange to be so high off the bottom of the silo and see this fluid stretching out to the concrete walls. If he were to fall over, would the water slow his plummet to the bottom? Or would he bob on the surface like that bit of trash over there? He thought he would sink. The most water he'd ever been in before was a tubful, and he'd sat right on the bottom. He was sinking up to his shins right then. The fear of slipping through some unseen crack and dropping to his death caused him to shuffle his feet cautiously. He fought to feel the metal grating beneath his soles, even as his feet grew colder and colder. Something silver seemed to flash beneath the grating, but he thought it was just his reflection, or the dance of the metallic sheen on the surface. "You better be worth this," he told the ghost of some baby down the hall. He listened for the ghost to call back, but it was no longer crying. The light beyond the doors fell away to blackness, so he pulled his flashlight out of his chest pocket and turned it on. The layer of rippling water caught the beam and magnified it. Waves of light danced across the ceiling in a display so mesmerizing and beautiful that Solo forgot the freezing water. Or perhaps it was that his feet no longer had any feeling at all. "Hello?" he called out. His voice echoed softly back to him. He played the light down the hall, which branched off in three directions. Two of the paths curved around, as if to meet on the other side of the stairwell. It was one of the hub-and-spoke levels. Solo laughed. "Bye," for bicycles. He thought of that entry and realized where the words hub-and-spoke came from. These were magical discoveries, how old words came to be. A cry. For certain this time. Or he truly was losing his senses. Solo spun around and aimed his flashlight down the curving corridor. He waited. Silence. The whisper of ripples as they crashed into the hallway wall. He picked his way toward the noise, throwing up new waves with the push of his shins. He floated like a ghost. He couldn't feel his feet. It was an apartment level. But why would anyone live down here with the waters seeping in? He paused outside a community rec room and dispelled pockets of darkness with his flashlight. There was a tennis table in the middle of the room. Rust reached up the steel legs as if the water had chased it there. The paddles were still on the warped surface of the rotting green table. Green for grass, Solo thought. The legacy books made his own world look different to him. Something bumped into his shin, and Solo startled. He aimed his light down and saw a foam cushion floating by his feet. He pushed it away and waded toward the next door. A community kitchen. He recognized the layout of wide tables and all the chairs. Most of the chairs lay on their sides, partly submerged. A few legs stuck up where chairs had been overturned. There were two stoves in the corner and a wall of cabinets. The room was dark. Almost none of the light from the stairwell trickled back this far. Solo imagined that if his batteries died, he would have to grope to find his way out. He should have brought the new flashlight, not his old one. A cry, louder this time, near, somewhere in the room. Solo waved his flashlight about but couldn't see every corner at once. Cabinets and countertops. A spot of movement, he thought. He trained his light back a little, and something moved on one of the counters. It leapt straight up, the sound of claws scratching as it caught itself on an open cabinet above the counter. Then the whisking of a bushy tail before a black shadow disappeared into the darkness. Chapter 89.
A cat. A living thing. A living thing he need not fear, that could do him no harm.
Solo trudged into the room, calling, "Kitty, kitty, kitty." He recalled neighbors trying to corral that tailless animal that lived down the hall from his old apartment. Something rummaged around in the cabinets. One of the closed doors rattled open and banged shut again. He could only see a spot at a time, wherever he aimed the flashlight. His shins brushed against something. He aimed the beam down to see trash and debris floating in the water. There was a squeak and a splash. Searching with the flashlight, he saw a V of ripples behind what he took for a swimming rat. Solo no longer wanted to be in that room. He shivered and rubbed his arm with his free hand. The cat made a racket inside the cabinet.
"Here, kitty,"
he said, with less gusto. Reaching into his breast pocket, he pulled out one of his ration bars and tore the packaging off with his teeth. Taking a stale bite for himself, he chewed and held the rest out in front of him. The silo had been dead for 12 years. He wondered how long cats lived, how this one had made it so long.
And eating what?
Or were old cats having new cats? Was this a new cat? His bare feet brushed through something beneath the water. The reflection of the light made it difficult to see, and then a white bone broke the surface before sinking again. There was a loose jumble of someone's remains around his ankles. Solo pretended it was just trash. He reached the cabinet that was making all the noise, grabbed a handle, and pulled it open. There was a hiss from the shadows. Cans and rotting boxes shifted about as the cat retreated further. Solo broke off a piece of stale bar and set it on the shelf. He waited. There was another squeak from the corner of the room, the sound of water lapping at furniture, a stillness inside the cabinet. He kept the flashlight down so as not to spook the animal. Two eyes approached like bobbing lights. They fixed themselves on Solo for a small eternity. He began to seriously wonder if his feet might fall off from the cold. The eyes drew closer and averted downward. It was a black cat, the color of wet shadow, slick as oil. The piece of ration bar crunched as the cat chewed.
"Good kitty,"
he whispered, ignoring the scattered bones beneath his feet. He broke off another small piece of the bar and held it out. The cat withdrew a pace. Solo set the food on the edge and watched as the animal came forward more quickly this time. The next piece the cat took from his palm. He offered the last piece as the cat came to accept it. Solo tried to pick it up with both hands, and this thing, this company he hoped would do him no harm, latched onto one of his arms and sank its claws into his flesh. Solo screamed and threw up his hands. The flashlight tumbled end over end in the air. There was a splash as the cat disappeared. A shriek and a hiss. A violent noise. Solo fumbling beneath the water for the dull glow of the light, which flickered once, twice, then left him in darkness. He groped blindly, seized a solid cylinder, and felt the knobby ends where the leg's sockets into the hip. He dropped the bone in disgust. Two more bones before he found the flashlight, which was toast. He retrieved it anyway, as the sound of frantic splashing approached. His arms were on fire. He had seen blood on them in the last of the spinning light, and then something was against his leg, up his shin, claws stinging his thighs, the damn cat climbing him, as if he were the leg of a table. Solo reached for the poor animal to get its claws out of his flesh. The cat was soaked, and hardly felt bigger around than his flashlight. It trembled in his arms and rubbed itself against a dry patch of his coveralls, mewing in complaint. It began to sniff at his breast pocket. Solo held the animal with one forearm across his chest, making a perch, and reached inside his pocket for the other ration bar. It was perfectly dark in the room, so dark it made his ears ache. He ripped the package free and held the bar steady, tiny paws wrapped around his hand, and there was a crunching sound. Jimmy smiled. He worked his way toward where he thought the door might be, bumping through furniture and old bones as he went. Solo, no more. Silo 1, the year 2345. Chapter 90. Donald's apartment had transformed into a cave where notes lay strewn like bleached bones, where the carcasses of folders decorated his walls, and where boxes of more notes were ordered up from archives like fresh kill. Weeks had passed. The stomping in the halls had dwindled. Donald lived alone with ghosts, and slowly pieced together the purpose of what he'd helped to build. He was beginning to see it, the entire picture, zooming out of the schematic until the whole was laid bare. He coughed into a pink rag and resumed examination of his latest find. It was a map he'd come across once before in the armory, a map of all the silos, with a line coming out of each and converging at a single point. Here was one of many mysteries left. The document was labeled Seed, but he could find nothing else about it. Donald could hear Anna whispering to him. She had been trying to tell him something. The note in Thurman's account, she was trying to say, had been left for him. So obvious now. She could never be woken. Not a woman. She needed him, needed his help. Donald imagined her piecing all of this together on some recent shift, alone and terrified, scared of her own father, no one left to turn to. So she had taken her father out of power, had entrusted Donald, had switched him with another man for the second time, and had left him a note to wake her. And what did Donald do instead? There was a knock on his door. "Who is it?" Donald asked, his voice not sounding like his own. The door opened a crack. "It's Aaron, sir. We've got a call from 18. The shadow is ready." "Just a second." Donald coughed into his handkerchief. He rose slowly and moved to the bathroom, stepping over two trays of old dishes. He emptied his bladder, flushed, and studied himself in the mirror. Gripping the edge of the counter, he grimaced at his reflection, this man with scraggly hair and the start of a beard. He looked half-crazed, and yet people still trusted him. That made them crazier than he was. Donald smiled a yellowing smile and thought of the long history of madmen who remained in charge simply because no one would challenge them. Hinges squealed as Aaron poked his head in the door.
"I'm coming," Donald said.
He stumped across the reports, leaving a trail of footprints behind, and a bloody palm print on the edge of the counter.
"They're calling the shadow now, sir," Aaron said to him in the hall. "You want to freshen up?"
"No," Donald said. I'm good.
He stood in the doorway, struggling to remember what this meeting was about. A rite of initiation. He remembered those, thought it was something Gable would handle.
Why am I needed again?
He asked.
Shouldn't our head be conducting this?
Donald remembered being the one to conduct such a rite on his first shift. Aaron popped something into his mouth and chewed. He shook his head.
You know, with all that reading you're doing in there, you could bone up on the order a bit. It sounds like it's changed since the last time you read it. The ranking officer on shift completes the rite. That would normally be me. But since I'm up, it's me.
Donald pulled his door shut. The two of them started down the hall.
That's right. The heads here do less and less every shift. There have been problems.